Welcome to another instalment of At the CAF. I'm Rob.
I'm Sam.
And today we're going to be talking about parliamentary democracy or representative democracy and what's wrong with it and what we think should be done about it or what's an alternative to it.
So what's wrong with parliament? Why is it that anarchist communists reject the idea that you can solve everything just by electing a good government? So the idea is that we have 650 odd MPs who are accountable to their local communities and their constituencies and work tirelessly to make laws and to organise society in a manner that benefits everyone.
Hurrah!
Hurrah! And when things like corruption or illegal or unwise wars happen, that's a rare aberration caused by external factors or a few bad characters. And there's nothing structurally wrong with how the whole system works. Now, we kind of all know that's not true. One of the things that's immediately obvious to anyone who looks at our political system is that not everyone's vote is worth the same amount. So a lot of people who have access to money and resources can influence how other people vote. So we see that the media becomes a huge factor in how decisions are made and what people think politically. And that media is itself a form of business with business interests, and the people involved in it are drawn from a certain class in society. They tend to help create a general sort of political culture where instead of the interests and needs of working people being reflected, it's the interests and needs of business classes and those with wealth and power.
I'm just going to come in on that here because I mean, there's also this idea that, oh, well, what about if you've got working class MPs and work, you know, people who are from, once they were factory workers, horny-handed sons and daughters of toil, right, who suddenly become MPs, and that's going to be all different. But it isn't, because once you're in there, once you're an MP, you're part of the ruling class, and you behave like that, so
it can't help when you're working in, it's the Palace of Westminster, yeah. So our lawmakers are sitting around all the sort of historical relics of a feudalistic age. But the other sort of problems you tend to find with a sort of parliamentary representative system, putting aside the fact that if you do get a bad MP or an MP that you don't like, you have to wait normally 5 years or several years until you can change them. But the other problem is that most of us, most of the time, don't have enough time and energy or don't have the ability to constantly be following everything they do. So as I sort of mentioned before, we're reliant on the media to tell us honestly what's going on, which they don't tend to do. Well, they very, very rarely do. But not just that, we're also reliant on that the only sort of plausible opportunity we have to get rid of an MP is to replace them with one of the other major political parties in our area. It's not that you get a good MP. Your best bet on a very good day is to get the least worst out of a bunch of very limited choices. So most people in the country will have a choice between one or two, maybe three, if you're very lucky, different individuals who largely have the same policy interests, platform.
Yeah.
And there tends not to be very much difference between the parties. But even if you get a group of people who elected, you get a majority government that is at the level of rhetoric and says that they're committed to socialism, they have very limited powers once they are in office. So when you take over the government, when you become prime minister and you have a majority in parliament, you've not actually taken control of the country as a whole. You've got maybe like one of like three branches of government that you're in control of. You might control the Commons, but you don't control the House of Lords, you don't control the judges.
And the whole range of the establishment as well.
Yeah, and economically, if the people with economic power in the country and the world as a whole don't like your policies, and if you're trying to distribute anything downwards towards the working classes, they're not going to like them, then they can punish and attack and hurt a government, and that actually means the working people, society. So what does that look like? Well, let's say that you had a government that was elected in power tomorrow, and they said, we are going to tax the wealthiest at a significantly high rate. You would probably see certain things happen immediately. You'd see a run on the British currency. You would see what they call capital flight. So you'd see a lot of money leaving the country. And that would in turn lead to people losing jobs and economic chaos for normal people.
In general, yeah. I think the thing to remember, though, is that Parliament, the parliamentary system, democracy, as we see it, it's the political wing of the ruling class, right? You've got the economic wing, the capitalists, right? And the political wing is the ruling class. It's actually a contradiction to be a socialist, a communist, or whatever you want to call yourself, and be involved in the parliamentary system, because basically you're managing capitalism. That's the bottom line. You can only manage capitalism in the interests of capital. You can't manage capitalism in the interests of workers. And that's wherein lies the big contradiction. That's the problem. For all people who call themselves socialists, who may be in the Labour Party or one of these smaller left parties, or even people in the Green Party who might call themselves socialists of sorts, or whatever, you know, ultimately, to get elected, to get in, to serve in Parliament, you're basically serving capitalism. And they would turn around and say, well, actually, no, I'm serving my constituent. Right? But to serve your constituents, you need to serve the interests of capital, right, in one way or another. Because you know, if you really did serve your constituents, then basically you'd be arguing like what any anarchist communist would be arguing for, right, would be the abolition of Parliament, the destruction of capitalism, the organisation of a free communist society, right, and a society built for need, not profit, you know. But that's not what you're doing as a member of Parliament. Any parliamentarist has got, you know, that's far from what they want.
And I think there's an interesting quote from Lucy Parsons, which is, she says, you can't vote your way up a hill. I think what she was saying there is that if you try and get elected on a radical platform, a lot of the time you're going to be dependent on people voting for it who don't wholeheartedly agree with it 100%, but see you as the best option. And let's put it in a bit more concrete terms of like current modern society. Let's say if you look at the most radical parts of the current Labour Party, they would believe that what they're doing is a political project, is that they are using the Labour Party, which has a lot of fairly centrist support in the country, has a lot of people in the country who just support Labour, not because they're committed to radical change, but because they prefer it to the Conservatives. Maybe they've just always supported Labour, or they have a single individual policy they don't like about one of the other parties. So the radical left think, well, we're going to get elected on the votes of a lot of people who aren't fully blown socialists yet. But once we're elected, once we're in government, that's fine. They'll see all the wonderful output that we do and we'll move the whole country left whilst we're in power. But the problem is that if you've got a voter coalition that includes people who are just slightly to the left of centre and just aren't fully signed up to an ideological political platform, when you try and implement that, if that in any way hurts their lives or inconveniences them, they are going to immediately look for political alternatives in other parties. So as we talked about earlier, like with things like economic chaos caused by the powerful and wealthy at the moment you get a socialist government in power, that means that the trying to get elected and trying to govern without having already persuaded people, without having done the hard work of persuading people of socialism, isn't going to work. And if you had already persuaded people that socialism and that was a good idea, then you wouldn't really need a government to implement it anyway.
Bottom line is socialism comes from below. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't come from above. Socialism is not something that is bestowed upon a population. It's something that is fought for and is won and created by those at the bottom of society.
Absolutely, yeah. So what's wrong with political parties?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, we in the Anarchist Communist Group are not a political party. Well, although we are a political organisation, you know, as we're not standing for Parliament, for one, but nor do we want to take power. We're not interested in taking power on behalf of the working class or whoever. We're not really a party in that. We're basically an organisation of people who want to see revolutionary change and to spread revolutionary ideas, like the kind of thing that we're listening to now. So not all political parties stand for elections, though, but ultimately your political parties do want to seize power in one way or another, whether it's by force of arms or the mainstream, by standing for Parliament. And that's what we're looking at today, Parliament. So I think what we've got at the moment, you know, we've got this two-party system. Okay, well, right, we've got other parties as well, but it's first-past-the-post system as well, so it gets pared down to a basic choice between two awful parties, right? And you're going to go for, you know, if people are going to vote in those elections, they're going to vote for which they think is the least worst. Now, I think the current situation, what we've had over the last quite a few years is we've had this centre extremism, if you like, or far centrism, for let's call it, which is this kind of Goldilocks politics ideas that left is bad, right is bad, this somewhere in the middle is just right, irrespective of the fact that under this centrist government that we've had, there's been loads of wars, millions of deaths in places like Iraq and so on, utter fucking carnage, basically, you know. But hey, it's the centre, so there's nothing too extreme in there. And the idea that anybody who goes out of that bubble, right, is a very bad person and somebody that should be, you know, we should be sceptical of, okay? If not sceptical, they should be fucking locked up. And this is the kind of the way of thinking we've got to now. Now we've seen a bit of a shift in that with the advent of Corbyn in the Labour Party, okay? And people talk about, you know, let's have a look at the Labour Party. Or I'm not going to bother talking about the Conservatives because they're a fucking gang of awful, horrendous bastards. You know, something by some of the natural party of capital, and maybe that's true to an extent. Although we'll also find that Labour have been every bit as good at being good capitalists as well throughout their history. Right, but looking at the Corbyn Project, what we see is we'll see a lot of talk about a Labour Party being a hard left party. But it's actually, in reality, it's still in that centre, that radical centre. Because if you compare the Corbynite Labour Party, it's to the right of Clement Attlee. It's to the right of Harold Wilson. It's to the right of James Callaghan, for fuck's sake.
Probably Ted Heath.
Possibly even Ted Heath, yeah. And certainly to the right of Michael Foot. Okay, the only difference you could say with the Corbyn thing is that they're possibly more anti-new, but they've got a more anti... Well, they've got an anti-nuclear position, Corbyn has. Well, I'm not even sure about that, actually.
A long time ago, he used to be things like anti-NATO. Very strongly
that
anti-nuclear.
Out the window,
but that, well, most of it has gone out the window.
Has gone out the window, yeah. That's right. But the point is, right, what we're looking at is not some kind of hard left project. We're still back in that radical centre, right? So nothing's really changed there. I think when people talk about hard left, we're talking about things like pro-Palestine, you know, little pet causes of the left, the broad left over the last 20, 30, 40 years or so. Right? And that's what we're looking at there. You've also got the Liberals we've seen them in government as well.
That's
the problem is we've got all really awful parties. Then you've got the far right as well. We're not going to talk about them because, you know, we shit on them from a great height. They're awful and we're not interested. Right. This is what we're looking at. There's at the end of the day, it's divided into two parties, which is going to come down to Labour or Conservative. Both of them are shit, right? And what will eventually happen will come down to people in any election voting for a lesser evil.
And I think that's a really important point. I think a lot of the time people think, well, I have to vote for Labour, let's say, to protect working people. And if a single extra child goes to school or is fed, or if like the poorest among us get a little bit extra money, it would be morally wrong not to support that political project. But the problem is that's based on a confused idea of cause and effect. When the working class are well organised, when the working class are willing to fight back, then it's absolutely true that more resources and money go to the most vulnerable in our society, because that's what we demand. It may also be that at those times the Labour Party is slightly more likely to win elections, but it's not that the Labour Party is giving us these things. It's the working class are demanding them, and the strength and the ability of the working class to protect its own interests are what decides how the most vulnerable are treated in our society, not whether it's someone in a red rosette in number 10 or a blue rosette. Like.
For example, the NHS.
Yeah, exactly.
The NHS didn't come about because the Attlee government said there will be an NHS. Right? That was a demand coming from below. Basically, the Labour Party knew which side its bread was buttered on. And they went for that. They put that into action, right? You know, it wasn't even as simple as Labour putting that into action. There was a few kicks and screams over that, and Labour was dragged and kicking to some extent into implementing that. But that was something that came about through, it was a popular cry. It was people had come back from the war and they thought, as they saw it, you know, they wanted better than what they'd had in the 1930s.
And people will keep coming back to the Attlee government, and you'll sometimes hear people go, oh, they nationalised 20% of the British economy, which is to some extent true, but what you have to understand is that 20% of the British economy was completely and totally broke at that time. Not only was it not making a profit, those industries that were nationalised, but they couldn't because of like the fact Europe was in like completely broken after the Second World War. So what they actually did was they took control of these industries, recompensing and giving huge sums of money to those who owned them.
Or putting the owners on the board of nationalised industries.
Sometimes both. And then made sure they were profitable just in time for in the 50s for a lot of them to be given back to the private interest. And you see something similar with the fact that it was just as the post office was starting to make profit again that it was privatised. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a recurring thing. So some people might be listening to this and going, oh, so we need to set up a good political party. But the point I think anarchists would make is that you can't have such thing as a good political party, because they have to make their a political party's primary aim will always be to get elected or to take power. And to do that, you immediately need to make a series of compromises with the already existing powers and institutions in the land. So it certainly isn't a case that you just need to run off and set up other parties. People have tried that repeatedly. And even if you were to get rid of First Past the Post and replace it with AV, the experience in Europe tells us that doesn't solve any problems. Like a fairly radical Green Party was elected and completely sold out all of its principles and ended up propping up conservative governments.
Yeah, and supporting a war.
As much as we'd like to think there's a quick fix and that we can just elect someone into power, you set up a new party, and then everything will be sorted out, it's just not the case.
I mean, coming back to that lesser evilism, I totally understand that.
Oh, absolutely.
And I totally understand people saying, I'm going to vote for, let's say, Jeremy Corbyn, Labour Party, because I think that'll be better than... They may or may not be right, you know. I'm not going to say either way. I think the intention is good.
Very good, yeah.
Right? I think the reality will be completely different. But, hey, we're not in the business of telling people to not vote for one party or another. What we are in the business of saying is, whoever you vote for, the boss class will win, right? Now, yes, there might be a lesser evil one side or another, but in the past, history's not convinced me of any of that. I mean, within weeks of the Attlee government being elected, it was sending in troops to break dockers' strikes, you know? And this has gone on throughout the history of Labour governments, the things that they've gone through. Mm. Attack workers whenever they've actually been expressing any kind of resistance to capitalism, right? Because that's basically what Labour Party is for. That's what it's about. It's never been a socialist party. There have been people who might call themselves or have some understanding of socialism of sorts in there, but it's never been a socialist party.
The history of the Labour Party is the history of union busting in a lot of ways.
Well, you know, Clause 4.
Yeah.
Clause 4 is something they go, yeah, but what about Clause 4? I can't remember it now, but it's just something like to secure for the workers of hand and brain, the fruits of society, and yada, 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 blah, 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 right? Which sounds all good on paper, but that was actually brought in by the right, Fabians, right? To actually calm down the left of the party at the time and just sort of basically build a consensus between the left and right of the party, you know? So it's all... You know, it doesn't mean much at the end of the day.
And the point, while I can understand why people want to vote Labour to mitigate some of the worst extremes of current capitalism, it can often be a fool's game trying to predict the future of parliamentary and electoral politics. So, for example, if you were to go back to 2000, a lot of people who voted for Blair, or 2000, the early 2000, a lot of people who voted for Blair for a second term, would never have predicted how he was going to react to the War of Terror and all that huge element of our lives and all of the individual liberties. It's really hard to know. If I vote for X, this is likely to be the best outcome. Yeah. So you have to be really careful. So if we can't expect governments or political parties to save us, what is the alternative?
I mean, there's no quick fixes. There's no easy solutions. Where we are at the moment, at this point in history, is a place, and you know, you'll hear us say this again, there's a low level of class consciousness. There's a low level of class or working class organisation. And in a way, because the class struggle is at a low level, you get people who are latching onto things like, oh, Jeremy Corbyn, who's not coming out with much that's that radical, but people will latch onto that as some kind of light at the end of a tunnel. But it isn't really that much light at the end of the tunnel, you know, and it's something that will be very easily snuffed out by the capitalist class, right? Another problem of this is that I've seen people who were on various shades of left-wing person who were involved, you know, I might not have agreed with them on everything, but they've been involved in lots and lots of good, solid activity, you know, community, industrial, various campaigns and that kind of thing. Suddenly, they're not involved in that anymore. They've all thrown their lot in with promoting the Labour Party, you know, and making the Labour Party the next government. And everything else, which was the real important stuff. It's been dropped, it's fallen by the wayside because it's all got shifted into serving this party machine. So that's the alternative, right, is building community organiser, solid working class community organisation, solid working class organisation in your workplaces, in everyday life, right, that is fighting the capitalism, whether it's at low level, at the local, local level, regional level, nationally, or internationally, or whatever, right, is people coming together and fighting for themselves, not fighting for any political party. Now, that all sounds a bit airy-fairy, and that's probably because in these harsh times, it is, right? Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to say is it's not just a matter of putting an X on a piece of paper. It's not just a matter of campaigning for someone who you think is a bit progressive so you can put an X on a piece of paper. This is not going to change anything. Yes, it may or may not create some sort of palliatives or some kind of painkillers in the capitalist onslaught that we're all going through. But what it's not going to do is actually change society, and we're interested in changing society.
Yeah, I think it, for those in the radical left who think that the radical left has taken over the Labour Party, I think in a lot of ways the opposite has happened. The Labour Party has taken over those segments of the radical left, and that is limiting the potential for a real radical change in our society at the moment. But I guess what an anarchist. So what's the alternative for anarchists, I guess? Just I'd add to what you said, which is sort of to put it in quite academic language, or to sum it up in a really big picture way, we want to put out our ideas into the working class so that we can start organising along the principles of mutual aid and solidarity. Practically, what that looks like right now is, for us right now, it's doing things like this podcast, it's putting out our regular magazine, Jackdaw, it's spreading our ideas and being involved and embedded in our community. But there is no quick fix, there is no cheat. We have to go out there and spread our ideas and change minds. And in a real way, that's what parliamentary radical leftism within a parliamentary context is trying to do. It's trying to sell you the snake oil of a quick fix.
But it's not just putting out publications as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that are going on in your neighbourhood, right? There are things that are going on down the road. There are things that are going on in that London, you know? there are all things that need addressing. I mean, for example, the universal credit.
Yeah.
Right? We need to be building resistance against universal credit. What we don't need to be doing is trying to elect another fucking MP, right, who's going to talk about universal credit in Parliament. But there are things to do with, you know, housing, you know, the extortionate rents, the rise of the slum landlords, you know, the fact that people are paying an arm and a leg to live in a hovel, overcrowding, all these kind of things. So we need to be building sort of, tenants or renters organisations from below, right? What we don't need is to be campaigning to elect another fucking Labour MP to talk about how bad it is for people in private rented accommodation, right? We don't need that, right? These are all the kind of things we're doing. You know, the sort of everyday grinding fucking racism and oppression, the homophobia, all of this kind of stuff that is because, you know, the level of intolerance that is that seems to be on the increase at the moment. These are things that need to be fought. We don't need to elect a politician to fight that battle for us, you know?
Yeah, I think there's literally just one thing I'd add to that, which is if you're wondering, what can I do? As individuals on your own, it's very limited what you can do. The first step is getting into a group, getting together with a group of people who have similar ideas, as yourself, because collectively we can do so much more.
So at the end of the day, if you want to vote in an election, vote in an election. That's up to you, right? What we're saying is there's more important work that needs doing.